What is going on, everybody? The Passion of the Christoph podcast. I'm tired as fuck. I just finished a book. I can't say who's publishing it. I really wish I could. It is called, I can't even remember the fucking title. It doesn't even matter. It's not about me. I'm selfish and self-centered, but that's all right. Because this is the place to admit those things. But I have an awesome guest, and that's what it's about. I have a fellow author and musician, Michael Allen Rose, bizarro author as well. And
stuff.
What's going on, man?
Hey, not a whole lot. How are you?
I feel that's a nice bio that like sums up a big information about you.
Yeah, I think you hit the basics. I do a lot of stuff, and
you do.
Sometimes people like some of it, and you know, then I keep doing more stuff.
You're just kind of like an artistic guy when it comes down to it.
I'm a dilettante. I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. I'm a art ninja.
Yeah, you're an art ninja. The first thing I want to get into, you are in, and I've never been a big fan of this, but I said you're in a cover band, and I've never been a big fan of cover bands. But wait, hear me out. Mm-hmm. There's two cover bands I would always want to be in.
Okay.
One was to be the keyboard player of a Nine Inch Nails cover band. You're in a Nine Inch Nails cover band.
I am indeed.
What do you play, dude?
I play the keyboard in a Nine Inch Nails cover band.
Fucking, dude. You're like...
Well, let me explain something to you here, Chris.
Okay.
Now, first of all...
You're living the dream.
I really am. First of all, I'm with you to a point.
Yeah.
Because I always felt like, okay, cover bands, because I've been, you know, I've been writing original music like yourself for a long time. Like,
oh, yeah.
Flood Damage, my original project, started in 1996.
Damn.
Yeah.
Respect.
I was banging on a keyboard in my parents' basement at the time, but it's, you know, that was the roots of this thing. But, you know, as I got into this tribute scene, that's when I started to sort of draw a line between the idea of a cover band and a tribute band.
Mm-hmm.
And what I kind of mean, I guess, you know, what we do in Now I'm Nothing is a tribute.
That's
to Nine
true.
Inch
You're,
Nails.
Yeah, you are a tribute band. My bad.
And,
yeah, that's
a
different thing.
You know, like a lot of people are like, well, so you just play covers? I'm like, well, yeah, but we try to bring the experience of a Nails show, like circa 1996, you know, to the stage. So we do the cornstarch, and we do the like the super high energy and the floodlights and all that other stuff. And
nice,
you know, a lot of people that have come out and seen us now have said it's the next best thing to seeing Nails live, and that's
dude,
that's the whole point.
Nails live is amazing. You know? I've seen them probably five. I mean, it's just one of the first like bands of my own. I can remember I had like some special experience. I remember seeing them for the first. I saw Head Like a Hole on my like friends.
Mm-hmm.
Sisters like television when I was in like fourth grade,
right,
and I'm like, oh my god, look at these dudes' hair, and the fucking head, the chorus just like memorized me.
Oh
and...
yeah, the Broken EP.
Oh
was
yeah,
a big life changer for me. I remember I was a teenager when Broken came out, and the Wish video where they're in the cage and all the crazy fans are outside, and there's leather and sparks and whatever. I remember watching that like late at night.
Oh yeah,
in the room
Wish.
On MTV's Headbanger Ball.
Just the lyric "fist fuck" just memorized me.
And I'm like, I saw this, and I remember it was like, you know, this was a bit after the glam rock thing and grunge had started, and you know, there was starting to be a little more accessibility for heavier music. And I remember seeing this and just being, my mind was blown. I was my brain turned to jello. I'm like, I didn't know music could do this, because up until then, I'd seen. You know, stuff like, well, I mean, remember the 80s with Mark Jovi and Def Leppard.
I love talk rock, but yes, it's not
I mean,
compared.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I still love Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
I don't even consider it a guilty pleasure.
Motley Crue, man. Motley Crue.
But when I saw that Wish video, I was like, I can't believe this exists. And that immediately made me go, I want to be that.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I mean, that was one of the founding influences on Flood Damage when I started doing that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then years later, you know, I meet all these other musicians who are in the industrial scene and stuff. And lo and behold, my buddy Mike Reedy asks me if I'd be interested in playing synths and backing vocals for his Nails cover band.
Nice.
You know, I'm like, oh my god, yeah.
See, I've only played keyboard for one band, but it was enough. I'm guitar, bass, and I'm a front man. I played in a band called Angel Autopsy. It was me and like pretty cute chicks. Like, it was pretty cool. They would like dress me up in makeup. I was a freshman in college.
Nice.
And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We played like one show, and then me and the cello player hooked up, and that fucked everything up.
Yeah, you don't shit where you eat, Chris.
Yeah, no, I learned that. I mean, I was freshman. You know, I was so horny in freshman year in college, or no, sophomore. So I didn't even have an excuse. But yeah. But oh, I was gonna say. So my other cover band, our other tribute band. I would want to be in, and if I still do this, we could tour together.
Okay.
I want to front a Marilyn Manson tribute band.
Now, it's interesting that you say that.
Yes.
Because, I'll tell you why, I know two such bands. Now, here's the thing about said bands. Now, yes. I'm not going to name names.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I'm a name-namer.
Yeah.
But just in case, I will tell you that one of them is very, very good.
I'm sure.
And one of them is really, really bad.
Are they bad because of their front man or because of the musicians? Come on, just say it.
All right, I'll say this. The bad one I'm talking about is because the front...
Come on. Michael, are you there? Are you being shy or did you leave us? Michael, say hello. Ah, shit. Okay, we're back. We're back. We lost him. All right.
I'm back.
Okay, tell us. Who? Tell us. Tell us the truth of the band. Michael?
So here's the deal. Okay. The one that I've seen that's not so good, the front man doesn't... Yes?
Yeah. Oh,
are we good?
We're here. We're good.
Okay. So the one that's not so good, the front man is kind of not... really Manson-esque, and the band can't really cover for him to make it better.
Uh-huh.
I will say, however, the one that's good is kind of not really working right now as a band, but the front man is a good buddy of mine. You know what? I will name names there because he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's this kid named Michael X. Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like Marilyn Manson circa 1997.
See, that's the thing.
Perfectly.
It's my thing would be, I want to be Over the Hill Manson.
You could do that, yes. Yeah, you know, I want to be... aren't any Manson bands covering his, like... He's, like, pudgy and pasty now?
Yeah, I want to be that Manson. I don't want to work hard. I want to be Over the Hill... I know where I'm at in life. I don't want to try to be 1996 Manson.
Right, that
could be for some 20-year-old. I want to be Over the Hill, like, doesn't even sing, just kind of, like, does poetry Manson.
You know what? We got to get you and Michael together, because he's an amazing young Manson.
Yeah.
And we could do, like, the Elvis thing. Like,
that would be awesome.
Stuff like Antichrist Superstar and stuff, you know.
I want to be old fat Manson.
Right, and then we, you know, Michael could take a break, he can hang out backstage, have a beer, and you can come out.
I can play, like Eat Me, Drink Me stuff. Yeah. That'll be awesome. I don't even know the last album. I really didn't listen.
Eat Me, Drink Me, and Beyond.
Yeah, Eat Me, Drink Me, and Beyond set. That's what I can do if I was your vampire. Yes. Yeah, I'll just do that.
So, one of the most fun times we've had with Now I'm Nothing, actually, was we did Starfuckers.
Mm.
And we surprised the audience. We had Michael come out as
Nice.
Yeah, and join us for the end, and then we launched into Beautiful People.
Yeah, I remember them doing that at Madison Square Garden.
So we good stuff. That experience, which brings us back around to the idea of a tribute band as opposed to a cover
That's
band.
A good tribute band right there. Are you guys, because I saw you guys, you're playing, are you got any more shows coming up? Or?
Oh, we do, actually. Well, our biggest show so far, we actually just played the House of Blues here in Chicago not long ago, which was mind-blowing, dude. Like, I never expected to play a venue like that.
Yeah.
You know, in any of my bands. I mean, especially, you know, it came out of nowhere. We had a good draw. We got to play House of Blues. It was like, this is amazing. So coming off of that, we've got a couple good bookings coming up. We're playing a little place called Wire here in Chicago. It's actually in the suburb Berwyn on October 23rd. And we're playing with Facelift, which is a really good Alice in Chains tribute.
Nice.
So it's pretty fun. We're starting to kind of hit the circuit a little bit. Eventually, it would be really cool to do a little tour or something and play some, you know, some other places, but we all have day jobs and shit, so, yeah. You know.
No, I feel you. I'm in the same boat.
It's one of those I wish we could kind of things.
Yeah, see, and I want to talk to you a little bit about your original music. I'm kind of going – I go through – this is my thing. I'm like – I'm always writing. Like, I'm just a writer, like, fiction-wise. I need to write. It kind of keeps me sane.
Sure.
You know, I know this whole thing, like, writers going, you know, getting drunk, and I'm not one of those. Like, I keep clean and write. Like, that's what I do to stay healthy.
I've tried writing, like, drunk or something before. It never turns into anything useful for me.
So it's like, writing is my, it would be, like, my soulmate, wife, or whatever. But music is like my sexy fling that I always, I have. And it's just, and I can go without it. Like, it's weird. I can go without, like, for 6 months. But then she, like, calls to me and she's like, Christoph, remember that time back in 2011? Remember when we fucked on that stage? And I'm like, oh, I do. God, you're so hotter than writing. I want to, oh, come on. And then I get back into it. And
there's a glamour about music that
there is. It really is.
It's indescribable. And it's, you know, if you have anything of the performer in you too, it's
I
like
love
you get
performing.
Up there and there's just this adrenaline and you get to turn, you know, your personality up to 11 and it's a special experience. Yeah, I love playing out and I am so thankful to Now I'm Nothing for allowing me to be a part of that because it's really giving me a lot of opportunities to play,
see,
just to have fun.
For me, and I've talked to you a little bit about, see, I love playing out. I fucking hate recording. I hate it with a passion. It's like copy editing for writers. You know, we were talking about that. I mean, it's just something that has to be done. But I could play live every day if it was possible for me. And if people paid me to do it, you know?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, what I found with the recording thing, like, so, Flood Damage put out an album this last November.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
And, you know, very excited to have that out there. And anybody who's listening, you should check it out. It's called Instructions
check
for the Assembly of Gods. There's a CD available from my Store Envy store. You can get it on Spotify, all that other crap. But anyway, plug. But I have to say, like, it had taken me about a decade since I'd put anything out on, like, any kind of real media.
Yeah.
Because I'm with you. It's like, it's tedious, it's difficult.
It is.
And honestly, what I discovered is the secret to getting an album out just now was hiring somebody who knew what they were doing to help me and to push me and to light the fire under my ass.
Yeah.
You know, like, I got a good producer, Sean Payne from the band Cyanotic, who's...
Oh, nice.
You know, whose music I've listened to for years. It's like, I got him to produce this thing, and all of a sudden, it's like, it sounds like I want it to... You know, he knows how to fix things. I can say, hey,
you're making
I really
me
want
feel
this
so fucking
like this.
Guilty.
And boom, you know, it's like, so I'm really realizing it's kind of like, it's the same reason we have editors as writers.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't really do it all yourself, even though it starts with the spark of one person, maybe.
Michael, you're making me, like, feel really guilty and lighting a fire up my ass. So, like.
Yes.
I have a really good situation. I'm basically, like, in a two-man project with, like, basically a little genius. The kid's, like, 21 and can just shred, can fucking play any instrument. Like,
that's awesome.
I mean, he can do it all, drums, guitar, bass, keyboard, and he has his own recording studio.
Very nice.
So it's free. All I have to do is take a train. Take a fucking train. About 4 or 5, maybe, like, 6 hours. Maybe.
Okay.
And
so you make a weekend of it. You go, okay, we're going to work on an EP or whatever.
I got to get some writing shit done, but I got to do it. Because we've already recorded about 5 songs. 2 are good to go. We got to re-record them. But, you know, like, they're, like, demo-worthy. We need to fix them up. But I want to just, do you think it's worth it to do an album? I've always wanted to make an album.
You know, it's funny. For me, it was only because I've wanted to do it for so many
years.
And I grew up with physical media being God. Like, you know, I still have my CD collection and I love it. And it's like, but what I've learned is the kids today.
Yeah, they don't care for shit.
You know,
care at
yelling,
all.
Get off my lawn. Don't give a shit about physical media anymore.
No, they don't.
So for me, it was like, I'm going to put out this one album that's going to look like I want it to. It's going to sound like I want it to. You know, I had Sean produce it. Matthew Rivera did the cover art for me and the design.
Very talented artist.
It's like, it looks beautiful. It sounds beautiful. And now I'm okay. Now when the next time I put something out, you know, I can do like a digital EP or something and I'll feel okay about it.
Yeah.
Because this now exists. But I think it is. I think it's worth it just because it's like...
Something
about having that physical artifact.
Like,
that's just magical.
Like, I do the Mandy DeSandre thing and I pump that shit out and I'm doing it for fun and I'm doing it for money. Like,
right, absolutely.
And with me, like, the idea of, like, doing music, like, something I've done since, like, for half my life, something about doing an album, which is becoming an anachronism right now.
Right.
And even if it's just a digital album, there's something about that, a collection of songs that complement each other. There's something about that are more than five. It just appeals to me.
I'm with you. It just appeals to me. Well, we're old school from that era where it was like, you want the album art. You want the collection of songs. Things weren't immediately accessible on the internet. You know, like every single song in the world wasn't available on YouTube, you know, with a lyric video. So there was more of a curated feel to everything. You know, this is an artifact. This is a piece of art that is put together in a specific way to elicit a certain emotional or intellectual response.
Yeah.
And to do that as an artist, you know, it feels amazing. It's not unlike when you put out a novel as opposed to getting short stories in an anthology. It's like, this whole is as I have arranged it to do something, to be something specific. I think it's the same thing with an album.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, singles are great and all, and I understand that that's the way things are going, but I think that one album that you can always point to and say, I did this, is going to feel really good.
Right on. All right, I want to talk a little bit as well. We're both part of a literary scene, Bizarro, and you participated in a press that I really loved for the last, you know, 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. You participated in the NBAS series. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Oh, yeah, I did. That was my first published novella was Party Wolves in My Skull.
Great
and that
title.
Was Eraserhead Press new Bizarro author series back in November of 2011.
Nice.
And, that experience was absolutely amazing. And what I had learned at that time was, about 2 years before that, I went to the Eraserhead press site because I had been working on a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure what to do about it. I was working a day job.
Yeah.
This is the first thing I had written since, like, I got out of grad school, and we were sort of talking before the podcast about this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't write anything. I didn't work on music. I felt just dead, creatively dead. So finally, I was working on something again. I was working on this comic novel called The O and I that I'm actually still hoping we'll find a home someday.
Mm.
But I was working on a thing. It wasn't really Bizarro, but I was looking around and figuring out what to do with it. And I went on to the old Eraserhead Press website.
Yeah.
Back in the day, there was a thing where they wouldn't accept unsolicited manuscripts. But they had this survey online that they asked you to fill out.
I heard about this survey. Yeah.
This infamous survey. It's like, it was like 30 questions, and some of them were pretty straightforward, and some of them were just strange.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like creative essay style. And I filled it out and kind of forgot about it. And then several months later, after I just sort of given up on the idea and just went, well, whatever, I get an email from Rose O'Keefe, the Eraserhead's editor-in-chief. And she says, hey, this book doesn't sound like something I'm looking for, but you sound like the kind of person we like to work with. You should consider sometime coming out to BizarroCon and meeting some of the community. So I was like, I asked my girlfriend at the time, I'm like, well, you know, this sounds like a cool thing, and I like these people and their books, and maybe I should check this out. And she encouraged me to go, and lo and behold, you know, this is, we're coming up on November now. This is going to be my 7th in a row without stopping, because just getting to know that community was so incredible and just stunning to me to find a group of people who are that supportive, creative, insane, and like, it was what I always thought being in a band or being in a theater production should have been,
but
wasn't. where it's like everyone actually wants you to wildly succeed. And they want to push you to do more stuff, and they want to collaborate, and they want to edit, and they want to publish. You know, it blew my mind. So I actually, that very first year, I took a workshop with Carlton Mellick and developed a pitch. And that pitch eventually became Party Wolves in My Skull 2 years nice. Later when Kevin Donaghy accepted it for the NBAS.
That's really cool. I'm a big fan of Carlton. He's been a really, really big influence on my work.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, he's been one of my favorites. Him, it's weird. Him and this writer, fuck, he's like a literary writer. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, Tom Peretta, who like writes like these beautiful literary novels. Both of them are very, very similar too. I want to like write an essay one day about it, but that's I digress. Cool. I digress.
But I think that's good too. I mean, yeah. I think most of us pull influences from a variety of sources too. You know.
Yeah, those two have been, like, my jam right there. Like,
that's very cool. They're
two I draw from. But that's cool, yeah. He's really – I've heard great things about his pitch sessions, like his pitch workshop.
But, oh, yeah, the workshop was great. I mean, it really – if nothing else, you develop an idea of what they're looking at.
Yeah.
What they're looking for, and that really helped me. And then, yeah, I just sort of wormed my way into the community and became a – I mean, I consider myself at this point almost sort of an ambassador for Bizarro.
Like, yeah, you are.
You know, introduce myself to the new people and try to be helpful. And that's just, I don't know. That's part of who I am, but I guess that's really my skill set. So I figure if I can contribute to the community like that, I'm paying it back for all the doors it opened for me. You know?
It's a fun genre, man. It's just, you know, I've been through so many different literary scenes. Like, if you look, I'm like friends with the literary people, I'm friends with the horror, I'm friends with the bizarre. But it's a very fun genre. You know, there's always bullshit in every genre, but,
oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, you're always going to get people with personality conflicts or whatever.
That's, you know, yeah, that's just, that's life. But
I got to say, I really have, you know, and I will argue till I'm blue in the face that, like, going out to Portland and meeting those people and the people who keep coming back to the Edgefield every year and go to BizarroCon, generally speaking, overall are some of the kindest, coolest people I've ever been in a community with.
Yeah, I've gone to a lot of good cons. I've gone to Bizarro Con, I've gone to Crawl Con, I've gone to Knee Con, I've gone to Horror Con. I love cons. I mean, now I'm living in New Hampshire where, like, we see turkeys, and that's our social contact.
Do you have a turkey con? Because if you don't, you could start one.
I've tried to start turkey con with my cat.
She
keeps fighting the turkeys, and I've tried to befriend these turkeys, and they're fucking assholes. I'm like, here's some food. Let's be cool.
Oh my god, dude. So I didn't know we were going to tangent over here, but let me tell you about my relationship with poultry, man.
What's up?
Oh my god. Okay, turkeys, assholes.
You telling me, man?
Geese, assholes.
Assholes. Yep.
Ducks.
You speak
assholes.
The truth.
Roosters. Assholes.
All of them. Assholes.
I've
All
been
them.
Chased by almost every major form of poultry
fucking
in my
dicks.
Life.
Dicks.
Like, I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's because I like cats and reptiles. Birds just know.
They're
like, oh, you're a predator guy. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Let's see how much of a predator you are when I jam these talons into your eyes, said the rooster.
Yeah, fuck them. You know, I have no love for them. It's a war. Khadija is my ally, my cat. We're at war with them. You know, this is like, it's kind of like a gang war.
Right.
It's not Bloods and the Crips, but it's hard. It's hardcore.
We're going to be on the right side, and you know, when the cats grow thumbs and take over.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The cats. I mean, Khadija, she's like, fuck you guys. I'm going to eat all of you. She got scared when there's 20 of them. She didn't attack, but when the turkeys are alone, she chases them.
Oh yeah. No, you don't want to get into a you know, one on a gang.
No,
war with them.
We were like, we're outnumbered. They run from us, though. They run from us. They still know that we can take them out.
It's true.
So, you know, that's what's up. That's
so, yeah, what's if up. Nothing else from this episode of your podcast, you've learned that I have an unending war with poultry.
And I trust you more because of that. If you were a turkey lover, I'd be like, you know, I like Michael Allen Rose, but he's
but
just wrong on this
turkeys.
Issue. He's wrong on this issue. I mean, that's, you know.
No, that's I'm not a poultry fan. And birds too. Actually, they, you know, they're like screaming, pooping little monsters. I had a cockatoo once, and mostly he just screamed. And like that was his whole thing as a pet.
Look, birds just belong in the wild. They belong in the jungle. You know, that's my feelings on birds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they belong in the jungle. You know,
I think you know what, all of them. I say let's move all the birds to the jungle.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I should run for office, and that'll be my only platform. Move all the birds to the jungle.
I think you'd get, like, 12% of the vote.
Maybe.
You know, there's a good 10% of us that are like, fuck the birds.
Fuck birds.
Fuck birds. And be like, yes. Yeah, all right. All right. So, oh, man. But, oh, so let me see. All right. I have a fun topic. Because we can relate on three subjects. We're both writers.
Mm-hmm.
We're both musicians. And we both, here's the other thing. We both have serious, significant others that love to take their clothes off.
Yeah.
We both have that.
True. That's very true.
So let's bond over this. We both have very attractive female partners that, like, totally love to get naked.
Well, okay, so first of all,
yes,
this is a good problem to have.
This is a great problem.
So I don't know if we're really complaining so much as just making an observation.
It's a great observation. Yeah. It's just fun to talk about.
Now, as far as Sada goes, you know, she's an internet model and things, so she's used to taking off her clothes. The thing is, I guess she doesn't get to talk about this much, but the thing is she feels about pants the way you and I feel about poultry.
Nice.
Yeah, I
Lisa
know
does too.
Is. I don't know what it is that happened with pants in her, but she hates pants.
Yeah.
Oh, she hates them so much. Now, I have an okay relationship with pants. I don't like shirts.
I don't like pants. I like boxers. I mean, I don't like shirts either.
Yeah, I'm not a big shirts fan.
I like shorts are okay.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so naked ladies in our general vicinity, good things.
I think they are good things. I like what she does, and Lisa does this too, using nudity to market books. I think it's a brilliant thing.
Yes, it is. Lisa Lestrange has been doing stuff like that too. And it's like, we have Bizarro Lovelies, a Tiffany scandal, of course.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know, there are so many who...
Bizarro
and, you know,
babes.
It's fun because you notice that the ladies in this scene, they really own their sexuality.
Yes,
like,
it's true.
It never feels prurient. It never feels like I'm being exploited to sell an
item.
It's like, we have some strong... Like, edgy, dangerous, cool women in this, in this scene.
That attracted me to the scene. I mean, I'm unapologetic, sex positive feminist. So
absolutely.
You know,
too.
So I'm
it's so nice to see. Like, they own their sexuality.
Yeah.
It is absolutely theirs. They're using it to back up their skills as writers, as artists, and it's like, that is awesome to me.
I'm game, yeah. I think it's a cool thing. I mean, and that's the thing too. I mean, as a marketing guy, I mean, I joke, like, I'm really an agent who just has to write, you know? So I love, like, marketing ideas and just how you get people's attention, you know? And I don't know if I've ever told you, I did manage a porn store at one time in my life.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I was told, oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny too how life works, because, like, my dream was just to, like, sell porn and write, and I'm kind of doing that right now as Mandy DeSandra. But
I was gonna say, I bet you picked up a few Mandy DeSandra things at the.
I would not be able to be Mandy DeSandra if I did not sell a bunch of pornography.
Right?
You know, I really wouldn't. I mean, gay. Like, I'm not gay, but writing gay, no big deal at all. Gay porn is actually much better, I have to say.
Well,
way,
the production values are higher.
Oh, way better storylines, way better sex scenes. The gay actors are actually much better. You have guys. Well, I mean, what's that?
I wonder what, you know, there's got to be some kind of
psychosocial. I can tell you why.
Okay.
A lot of the gay porn actors, I'm just keeping it real, a lot of them were basically theater people.
Yeah, I can see that.
They were theater kids, so they actually have an acting background, where a lot of the porn women were kind of just like, I'm hot.
Right, that's true.
This is a way to make money. But the you know, and it's sad because these guys are actually theater guys. And they're like, oh, fuck it. This is a way to make money and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Dude, if I'd stayed in acting and not gotten into writing, I would have spent the 2 years of my life that I was young and hot, you know, doing porn. And
yeah, you probably would have. Yeah, you could have been a pretty good porn guy. I could see that.
I'm too old, but now at least I can do the burlesque scene because, you know, they're all body positive, and I still have the old performance.
Yeah, I don't have I don't want to admit anything right now, so I'm just going to be quiet.
You're waiting for the Pudgy Manson man.
I'll just be Fat Manson now. That's my next goal. That's my next goal. But yeah, cheers to us, man. We got naked girlfriends that like to read Bizarro. We're doing all right, man. We're doing all right. So, on that note, I always like to end on a positive note. I'm gonna say, bid you an adieu, sir. This has been an awesome, awesome time. Thank you for coming on the show. I'd like to just leave you the last moments. Please tell us any new stuff you got out, anything you'd like to plug. Please let us know.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a blast, man. Thanks for having me.
Definitely.
And the new book is called Boiled Americans. It's right out on Bizarro Pulp Press, and just came out about 2 weeks ago. So it's new, it's hot, it's really strange. It's an experimental book that sort of took gun violence over the weekend, the July 4th weekend in Chicago, 2014. 30-some people were shot over that one weekend. And it takes that as a starting point and then explodes into a bunch of fragments. There's autobiographical stuff, journalism, surrealist stuff. Really strange, but really interesting book, I think.
Nice.
So I hope people check it out. I'd love to hear what people think. The Flood Damage album is called Instructions for the Assembly of Gods, and I'd love it if people check that out, of course. And I can't reveal it yet, but I might actually have some good news after BizarroCon about what might eventually be my next published book.
Nice.
Maybe I'll have to come back on the show sometime and
definitely, Michael. We'd love to have you back. Love to have you back.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much for
having me. All right. Take it easy. Passing to the Christoph Podcast. Peace.